you and I both know, we've seen it. There are any number of dogs out there who run on heart. And they will give 110%, 150%. And they will run themselves into the ground because they're running on heart. And that's great. And heart's an important part of the bird dog. But why would we ask them to if we don't have to? What if you could take that heart and put it inside a properly constructed package so that that great heart that's doing all of this because it loves it and because it loves you isn't crippled and exhausted by the end of the day?
Hey, bird dog babes. My name is Courtney Vashon, and I am obsessed with all things bird dogs. And I'm here with you to share the stories, experiences, knowledge, and opinions from the women and a few guys in the industry that are killing it. I'm a Wisconsin girl living in a Montana world. I'm mom and two incredible kiddos, wife and occasional assistant to a pro gun dog trainer, traveling the U.S. talking about canine nutrition while hunting, breeding, and competing with my German wire hair pointers and Bronco Italianos. As someone who started hunting later in life because I wanted to give my dogs the opportunity to do what they were bred to do, I'm here to help inspire, educate, and connect women to get their bird dogs out in the field and experience a bond like no other. So pour yourself a glass of wine and get ready to be challenged and encouraged while you learn. This is the Bird Dog Babe Podcast. Hey, Bird Dog Babes. Today we are talking to Laura Reeves, host of Peer Dog Talk Podcast, on the importance of structure in our hunting dogs. Have you ever read the AKC or FCI breed standard of your breed? Essentially, a breed standard is the picture and words for how a breed should look and also details the temperament of the breed. It is a pattern used by breeders in their attempts to breed typical specimens of the breed, with the idea that a dog that is structurally sound will be able to perform at its best in the field. Laura is a longtime sporting dog breeder and most recently an AKC judge. She was at the very first dog show I attended in 2004, and I'm grateful for the knowledge and experience she has shared with me personally, as well as with her more broad audience on her podcast. As someone who knows, understands, and applies the importance of structure and function in her own breeding program, I'm excited for you to hear all about Laura's past and growing up in bird dogs and the importance of breeding and structurally sound dogs. So let's get after it. Thank you to our sponsor, Dakota 283, unparalleled protection for traveling to and from your favorite hunting spot. Dakota 283 kennels are a premium quality Rhone mold with recessed handles on top for convenient and safe tie down. It makes it easy to lift up into the truck. I love the secure door frame with high security locks, so I know my dogs are safe when I need to stop for fuel. An added bonus are the drain holes in the back, which make cleaning a breeze when your dog has been run hard and put away wet. Head over to Dakota283.com and enter promo code BIRDDOGBABE for a 10% discount to all my listeners. Today we are talking with Laura Reeves. How you doing, Laura?
I'm great. Courtney, how you doing?
Excellent.
So excellent.
Hey, how are those Spinoni puppies doing that you just have on the ground?
God, they're so incredibly cute. They turned 2 weeks old today. And, you know, they're at that stage where it looks like the zombie apocalypse when she lays down and they go to nurse.
Oh, my gosh. And the eyes are opened.
Eyes are open. Yep. No, they're adorable. I just love the differences in the different breeds, right? Like, these are not wire hairs, man.
In what way? Explain that.
They're much mellower.
And you can see that already.
Oh my God. Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. So, okay. Remember, my family started with Clumber Spaniels. Even before that, we had Field Trial Labs, but Clumber Spaniels and then wire hair pointers. And my mom and I saw a picture of a Spinoni in a book a million years ago. We said, oh my God, it's like you had an accident with the wire hair and the Clumber. And that's really a lot what it's like. The Clumbers are like sound asleep, and you're 3 or 4 weeks before they even begin to think about being as mobile as the Spinoni are now. And by 10 days, 2 weeks, my wire hair puppies are out of the box.
Yeah.
Right? There's a tremendous difference that we see in different breeds, absolutely as early as right now.
Right. And so some of us have noticed that with wire hairs, okay, we're going back because 10 to 14 days old are climbing out of the box.
Yes.
Have you noticed in your experience, those that have been the first out, that that ends up being your keeper?
A lot of times, but not always. Okay. Honestly, I've had plenty of those. I'm out of the box and my eyes aren't even open puppies. I use a 12 inch tall swimming pool for my whelping box. So I'm saying when they're out of a 12 inch, like they're over the edge at 10 days before their eyes are open, you're like, I don't want that one.
Cause you just know, it's going to be full on.
Exactly. And so this goes to, right, this goes to knowing your puppy buyers, knowing your families, knowing your dogs and knowing your breed. And we did early on, I did a lot of Volhard testing, you know, that kind of 1 through 5, and I'd see a 5 and I'd be like, nope, I'm not keeping that, man.
Yes.
So you just kind of depends on what you want, right? And what you see. And a good breeder is with those puppies 24/7 watching and, you know, in the back of their mind, it's all calculating. Like my co-breeder, the Spinoni co-breeder, she's very much about taking notes and she's got books. Man, this woman is so organized. It's embarrassing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how do you, no, it's just all in my head.
So let's dig into your history, who you are.
Okay. And
besides the infamous host of Pure Dog Talk.
Yes, I am
That's
the host
good
of Pure Dog
there.
Talk. Yep. That has been kind of an interesting journey in and of itself. I came to it with a background in purebred dogs dating back to the field trial labs that my dad had. And me at 7, 8, 9 years old in a little white lab coat throwing maggoty ducks for the labs when we were out training.
Yes.
And, you know, if the dog wouldn't retrieve, I was the one that they would tap on the head to send into the scummy cow pond. You know, like, nice line. Great. Thanks, man. And, so I was that child. My mother enrolled me in dog care 4-H when I was 9 years old because I was shy and retiring and lacked people skills. And my best friend was the librarian, Mrs. Young. And I was conceivably the only third grader known to man that knew the Dewey Decimal System by heart. And my mother really wanted me to have a direction. And I had a Beagle Dachshund Cocker Spaniel Lasso Poodle, Heinz 57 Mutt Dog, named Morris, that who I had taught to sit up and beg and shake and, you know, put his ear up and salute the flag and all kinds of crazy things. So she figured this would be a good direction for me. And so I did that. And I quite sincerely believe that 4-H saved me from a life of, I don't even want to think about it. And my father got sick of hauling hay and building fence for our horses when I was in about 6th grade. And so he said, if you'll get rid of these bleeping horses, I'll buy you any purebred dog you want. And I was like, okay. So I wanted an English setter. And I did. I got a very nice English setter from a woman by down in California. It was actually one of the first parvo litters, if you can imagine.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, so all of that, fast forward through many English setters, and we were sort of the local rescue de facto for every hunting dog in the county, and you name it. A lot of experience with a lot of dogs. My mom fell in love with Clumber Spaniels at the local dog show and embarked on what became her life's passion. And meanwhile, one of those sort of halfway rescue dogs that showed up on our doorstep was a German Wirehair Pointer that somebody had bought to hunt with their adult short hair. And she was a baby puppy, and she went in and busted the bird. The guy, you know, kicked her a few times, threw her in the backyard, kicked her a few more times, and that was all she wrote until I got her at like 6 months old. And she hated men. I mean, she hated men violently.
Don't blame her.
Nope. Yeah. And I spent a lot of time rehabbing her. And because I was, you know, at that point, maybe 15, you know how 15-year-old girls are, right? And I was obsessed. And so she wasn't very pretty, but she was mine.
English
setters had proven to be more grooming than I really wanted to do. And they sort of fell by the wayside.
Did you compete with the setters?
it's a great story.
Oh boy.
It's a great story. So my very first dog show with this little dog who I had wanted to name after Amelia Earhart because I was studying Amelia Earhart in school. And my father didn't like Amy as a name. And so he said, whoever could get her to come to her name first would get to name her. And he cheated and used food. And so her registered name was Edwardian Secret Love. And he named her Edsel after the ugly car.
Oh my.
That was my father. He was a charmer. Edsel and I went to our very first AKC dog show at the Fairgrounds in Corvallis, Oregon. And I will never forget it. It is a caution to many of us who show dogs to remember or judge dogs or what have you. I walked in the ring with my, I don't know what she would have been, 8 or 9 month old English setter puppy. Janet Wilcox was judging, and my puppy was not sufficiently groomed, and she read me the riot act up one side and down the other. Keep in mind, I was 13 years old.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. And I left that ring in tears, inconsolable, just devastated. Aww. And the fact that I stayed involved in dogs
and
was
you
not
went back.
Yeah. Was not as a result of Mrs. Wilcox and my English setter puppy. But it did sort of scar me for life about dogs being that needed grooming, and it took me a very long time to go back to a breed that actually required a lot of trimming, I have to say. So anyway.
Well, your dad jinxed her, first of all.
Well, he did.
You don't name them things because they grow up to be that. And if it's an ugly car,
she was
come
actually
on, Dad.
A pretty puppy. She really was. She had a lot of guys and dolls breeding. I mean, she was very well bred.
Good.
The gal who bred her is still breeding dogs. I see her in California. So the whole point of the exercise for my father was that it had to be a hunting dog. Mm-hmm. I had grown up hunting with my dad. I wanted something else. He said, no, I couldn't have anything but a hunting dog. So the wire hair became my project, and I showed her and trained her and trained her and made it so that she could be examined by a man judge in the ring. And that was my proudest moment because she would take one look at any man she saw and bite him just because. It took a lot of work, but I did it. And that sort of started a foundation of working with difficult dogs. I actually made my living as a professional handler for many, many years working with kind of problem children, kind of dogs that needed a little extra. You know, I was never that dog handler that got to have the push button dog. I wouldn't even know what to do with one. Right. The projects.
I mean, I know how well you've done with a couple wire hairs that gave you some grief because I owned the litter mate to one of those.
There you go. I refer to Mr. Jack as my PhD in dog handling. That dog taught me more than any dog before or since. And I think that's an important piece to keep in mind when we think about our dogs, whether we're training them in the field or training them in the show ring or training them for obedience or training them to lie on our couch nicely. smart dogs, difficult dogs teach us far, far, far more than the perfect, easy, never raises an eyeball, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Those are the dogs who teach us and help us grow in our relationship with the dog, in our abilities, all of those things.
Right. And your breeding program of wire hairs took off from there as Kosha Kennel.
My mom had bred some wire hair pointers when I was still at home. That first bitch, though she was not beautiful, she was well-bred in field lines. Mm-hmm. And I laugh a lot. Many of you, your listeners may know or know of or have heard of Ray and Lynn Calkins of mm-hmm. Cascade Wire Hair Pointers. Well, that first wire hair pointer of mine, Pepper, was bred to Ray and Lynn's first wire hair pointer, Drifter. And she was bred to Drifter once and Cade twice. Cascade Rogue was a Drifter son. And so we had litters of wire hair pointers, you know, in the family. And then I went to college and my dog got placed and all kinds of horrible things, you know, like that. So dial it down a couple of years and my parents are divorced. My mom has acquired a new wire hair pointer and it is a Cascade Ike daughter. And her husband, they were moving from one place to another and decided that they wouldn't keep this bitch. Meanwhile, the Akita that I had acquired when I moved to Seattle and started working at a different job had various reasons had to be neutered. So I got this wire hair pointer from my mom and she and I did our breeding program together and basically until she passed away in 2015. And so I started my own line of wire hair pointers, my own family of dogs, if you will. I started with a Cascade Ike daughter. So lines I was very familiar with and I bred her to one of Mildred Revelle's dogs. His name was Weidenhugel Merlin V. Nico. He was a champion master hunter. And he also had a CD. He was out of a dog that Mildred had imported. So he was half import bred into her long, long line of Weidenhugel bitches. And that was the foundation that I started with. And that first litter was born in 1996. And so I have plans to breed a litter summer that will be the first time I've, variety of reasons, first time I have done a half brother, half sister, and it will all track back directly to that foundation breeding.
Very exciting. So the reason I wanted to talk to you specifically on this topic today, structure and function, you're somebody, I mean, from my very first dog show in 2004, I think you were there, or not the second one, maybe.
I think it was the first one. I remember. Yeah. Remember you were very, I hadn't seen you before. You had a wire hair. You were very nervous. And
imagine that. I made ring time though, I think. Cause that's always a bit of a struggle.
Yeah.
And just all the way. So along the way, you have shared incredible knowledge with me, the breed in general, specifics, characteristics, structure, the harsher or the darker the pigment, the harsher the coat. I mean, there's Laura-isms, that just stick with me and I love it. And you're also somebody in wire hairs that at the national events, you're a professional handler. You were showing all week, but you stayed. You always stayed.
That was the best part of my national for years and years and years. From
and
the
you were on horseback.
National. Yep.
Yes.
You very first national I ever went to in 1997 was in Washington. And even on years that I couldn't necessarily stay for the whole event, I would stay for as long as I could. And it was an opportunity for me. I grew up on horses, right? So horses and dogs, OMG, I've died and gone to heaven.
Does not get any better.
It doesn't. And I've made some questionable life choices to pursue that opportunity, I have to tell you. nonetheless, I love watching dogs run. I love watching dogs learn. I have run my own dogs in NAFTA. I have run my own dogs in hunt tests. I have scouted at horseback field trials, national events, you name it. I ran clumbers in hunt test. I trained labs for hunt test. I have a cross section of that background because that was how I was raised. And that was what my dad didn't want me to have an after school job. So he would pay me. I don't know what minimum wage was in 1983 or whatever. It was, you know, maybe $1.75 an hour or whatever it was. That's what he would pay me to stay home and run baseball drills with the labs to teach him blind retrieves and take the clumbers to the pond and try and make them use their little back legs so they didn't sink. You know, teach the wire hairs to retrieve instead of crunching the bird when they looked at you. You know, all those what? Things. Yeah. Yeah. That was my childhood.
That's awesome. And now that you retired from handling, but you are a licensed AKC judge as you continue yes. to get more breeds.
Yep.
And so you fully understand this concept of structure. In a breed, in these bird dog breeds, where it is the ultimate to have dogs bred to be fantastic in the field. You know, whether people's focus is on breeding field champion to field champion, VC to VC, you name it, to have those elite titles, a lot of times there's not the aspect of structure and breed characteristics. And I think in organizations such as NAVDA, which I love and is my favorite, when we don't have breed standards, we don't have the breakdown of the body should be longer than tall, and there's reasons for that. Mm-hmm. What can people in those venues do to try to improve, but first learn about mm-hmm. structure, and why should they? Why is it important to have a dog that has a nice lip back off shoulder, that has a good top line tail set? Right. Tell us why, Laura.
Okay, so stop and think about this for a minute. Dog shows that many of the today's field guys, hunter guys, sort of poo-poo, right? As those are foo-foo dogs. Do you understand that dog shows were created by hunters? That's how they started. Because two guys said, my bird dog is better than your bird dog. And mm-hmm. then they got their buddy Chuck to come over and say, this one's the better bird dog. And then they, you know, retired to the bar and toasted each other. That's how dog shows started. Yeah. That's how dog shows started. And as a matter of fact, the Westminster Kennel Club dog show was started at a hunting club.
Hmm.
Okay.
And so that's the pointer. That's where we're getting that part.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. And so the thing to realize with that, so take that to the next step. Once they started having dog shows, they created what are considered a written standard of excellence for each breed. And these guys, Chuck and his buddy Phil or whatever, who owned these dogs, are writing these breed standards. And basically they're looking at their best hunting dog and saying, what are these characteristics? And they're describing in a written standard their best hunting dog. Hmm. And most of those standards used terminology or language that came from horses. When you talk about withers and croup and loin and back and all of those hocks, those are horse terms. And so they didn't have terms for dogs. They just applied what they knew already from horses. And again, think about when this is. This is in the mid to late 1800s that these things are happening. These are people whose sole transportation is a horse. And they know what makes a good horse, what makes a horse that holds up. They know what makes a dog that holds up because they're hunting with them. It's subsistence hunting. And so they're describing that. And so the important piece of this is that the written breed standard for the German wire-haired pointer or for the pointer or for whatever breed you choose with the American Kennel Club, that standard was written by hunters to describe their best hunting dog. Hmm. And their best hunting dog was a dog that they took out to put meat on the table, not just to have fun. And so that is where I start. When I look at dogs, when I'm judging them in the show ring, when I look at dogs, when I'm watching a dog run at the field trial or the hunt test or the NAVDA test, I'm starting with what is the written standard that was written to describe somebody's best hunting dog. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yep.
And so when you talk about, for example, angulation makes people's heads spin off. It's very simple. It's geometry. And it describes the front angulation, if you will, is a description of the shoulder bone that goes from the point of the withers down to the forward point of the shoulder. And then that connects to what's called the upper arm, the humerus, and that comes back to the elbow. And in most sporting dogs, that angle should be that of basically a 90 degree triangle, or as close to that as you can accomplish. The reason for it structurally is that that structure of the front assembly puts the front end, which is the end that takes the impact when the dog is running, right? They're landing on their front. They're landing on their shoulders when they're running. That takes all the impact when they hit the ground. And it also supports the spine, right? That's like the roof. When you think about the top line, you're thinking about the big beam that goes down your roof to hold it all together. That's, yep, that's hung off of the spine. And the spine is supported by that 90 degree angle shoulder assembly that puts it way back there underneath the body. And when you open that angle up, right, you make it a straighter angle. You move the top of the shoulders up into the neck. You move the humerus that connects to the elbow way forward, so it's almost underneath the ear. Okay, what happens then? What happens is there's less ability to absorb the shock of impact. When they take a stride, just basic geometry tells you that if your arm can only go 2 inches forward before it hits bone, you're going to take a shorter stride than a dog whose arm has more play in it, right? For lack of a better way to describe it. And that dog can reach all the way past its nose. That dog's going to cover more ground more easily, more efficiently, and therefore get less tired. You're going to go through the day better. You're going to have a better hunting day. You're going to be able to hunt more days in a row. You're going to be able to work one dog and do all the work that you want to have done in the day. In a wire hair pointer, you may be going to go from jump hunting ducks in the morning to maybe a little dove shoot, to maybe you're going to take some pheasant in the afternoon. Maybe the evening you're going to go back to your duck hunting spot and see if there's anything coming back in on the evening flight. That dog that's built properly, that is built to the standard, that is built to match that first guy's great hunting dog, is the one who's going to be able to do that. And he'll be tired at the end of the day, but he'll get up and do it all over again the next day. Mm-hmm. And right, you and I both know, we've seen it, there are any number of dogs out there who run on heart, and they will give 110%, 150%, and they will run themselves into the ground because they're running on heart. And that's great. And heart's an important part of a bird dog, but why would we ask them to, if we don't have to? Right. What if you could take that heart and put it inside a properly constructed package so that that great heart that's doing all of this because it loves it and because it loves you isn't crippled and exhausted by the end of the day.
Mm. The perfect package.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's always the goal. I mean, my mom bred the first Best in Show winning dual champion in wire hair pointers. It was out of a bitch that she and I bred, and she bred that bitch to a dog that, I'm going to be honest, I didn't approve of. She did it on her own. God love my mother. And it was a great breeding. And it produced some amazing dogs. And I've had to eat my words 28 million times over the years. And that's okay, because we live and we learn, right? And that dog was best opposite at the National Specialty Show twice. He placed in the national championships. He won all age stakes, and he won an all breed best in show. Very competitive all breed best in show.
So what's,
it is what's, possible.
What's your thought on, so I'm somebody starting out. I have a great dog, great hunting dog. I'm very good temperament, health tests, all the things are there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know so much about structure, mm-hmm. but I want to get an opinion of my dog structurally, but I am not comfortable taking it into a show ring to have a judge evaluate it. And let's be honest, it's intimidating.
It can be. Yeah.
There's professionals in the industry that are doing this, coming from somebody who's a complete novice, mm-hmm. maybe doesn't have the finances to afford a professional, but mm-hmm. I want an honest opinion on my dog before I take it into the show ring. Where can we start?
My suggestion, and it's a strong suggestion to anyone who is able to, find a breeder, find a mentor. Okay. If that doesn't work, find your local kennel club, call them up and say, I'm looking for someone who knows about, pick your breed, German Wirehair Pointers. Is there anyone in your club that is an AKC licensed judge of German Wirehair Pointers that would be willing to evaluate my dog for me? And start there. If you have a breeder or a mentor or a friend, anyone else in the breed, call them up and say, hey, I want somebody to take a look at this dog. Who would be a good person? Who is involved in both field and show in our breed? Who would, you know, go over this dog for me, look at this dog for me, and give me an honest and unbiased critique of the dog? Because there are people in every breed. I will do that for anyone in German Wirehair Pointers. And I, as you can personally attest, sometimes people don't like to hear what I have to say.
it's an honest opinion.
Yeah, it is that. Right. And maybe you want more than one, right? But that's what's right. great about dog shows. You get right. more than one opinion. Okay? You pay these people $30 and they give you your opinion.
Yeah. But here's the thing I think that people need to understand too. It's might not always be something you want to hear. Mm. But listen to the advice. Be grateful for the advice. Take what you need from it. But yes, seek a second opinion.
Yeah. If you don't like what you hear and you hear it three times, well,
there's something there.
Right.
Yeah. But listen.
I think listening is important. I really do. It is to me. The value of a show championship is not so much that you acquired it, right? Like, I'm going to be honest with you. It's the least difficult of the many things that you can do with your bird dog. Mm. But it is the fact that you had to have at least minimum three opinions. And you had to compare your dog to somebody else's. And you can look at your dog and say, my fuzzy face poopsie doodle is the best, the most adorable, the most perfect. And you can have someone else look at them with clear eyes and an understanding of the standard. And they say, well, you know, probably Poopsie Doodle is adorable, but here are some things that you might consider, right? Or you take Poopsie Doodle to someone with that background and they look at Poopsie Doodle and say, oh, holy hell, this is fabulous, right? So those are the kind of things you want to hear, you want to know.
Mm-hmm. And fun matches, that might be a yes. place where people can first start mm-hmm. out and try it before they actually get judged per se.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Fun matches. And again, if you've gotten in touch with your local kennel club, frequently they'll have, outside of, you know, COVID-19 days, many times right. they will have handling classes where you can come and there's an instructor and they will show you how the basic concept works, right? Like, you didn't go to your first NAVTA test and know how everything worked perfectly. And you didn't, you know, go to your first field trial or your first whatever and know all the rules. This is just a way to learn how to do the stuff. Mm-hmm. It can be intimidating because everybody's all dressed up and you want to be there in your shit kickers and your jeans, and that's fine. But it really is not nearly as mysterious as it seems, I promise.
Right. And you brought up a good point of just the COVID-19 thing that's going on. And
right.
We're all trying to find ways to pivot, right? To make, yep. How can we pivot from what we're used to doing to make it work now? Yep. And let me tell you, YouTube has got it.
Yeah.
So right. If you want to know, get some tips and tricks, that's there. And
the podcast, heck, you can always go listen to Pure Dog Talk.
Yes. Yes. I was just going to say that because I know that you've done some on that too. But I mean, I just built a website a couple weeks ago watching YouTube. So right. there's ways to pivot and learn right now, where you don't need, you can be in the comforts of your home and learn, not be intimidated.
Yeah.
But Laura, talk about your podcast and how you cover some of that.
Okay. So Pure Dog Talk is specifically designed for the purebred dog fancy. And we just, I think the other day had episode number 380, over the course of the last about 3.5 years.
Awesome.
And it is every single topic. I literally made a t-shirt up that said there's a podcast for that. I'm not lying. Every single thing from how to stack your dog, which is literally episode 2, all the way through interviews with judges, interviews with field trialers, interviews with coonhound guys, interviews with geneticists, interviews with veterinarians, everything you can imagine, legislation, breeding, grooming, handling, all of it. So it is a vast and broad library, and there is a way to do a keyword search. And I'm to the point now where even I can't remember all the episodes and I have to keyword search them.
That's a good problem.
Yeah, it is a good problem to have.
But something that stands out in my mind, you put on handling clinics at yes. our Wire Hair National often, and mm-hmm. I think that would be a good place mm-hmm. for people to also go once we get back to having national events where we can attend in person.
Right.
That people can learn from that, because I've mm-hmm. been to several other nationals mm-hmm. just in my scope of work where I've been able to watch similar happen. And watching juniors, I personally still love to sit ringside watching the junior handler competition.
My favorite thing to judge.
And they're, Laura, remind me of the age. They start at 8 or 9?
Nine to okay. 18.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they even have started doing something which I think is so awesome. Many of the dog shows are now offering what they call peewee. So it's up to 9 years old, like from 5 to 9 or something like that. The mm-hmm. cutest thing you have ever seen, or the one show that I was at in Canada, and they had me judge the plush puppy group, and this was littles, right? So under 5 years old, too little to maybe control a dog. So they get to have a stuffed animal and they got to run that around the ring. Yeah. Oh my God.
Adorable.
So freaking cute.
Adorable. But the kids are learning, and they're so eager to learn, and they're putting it to use in, You catch things that they do that you go, oh, that's going to be a little trick right. I put in my pocket from learning right. from that younger generation, because you know that they're spending every night at home with their dog mm-hmm. trying to get better.
And here's another just kind of a thing to kind of put in your bonnet and think about for people. If you have kids and they're interested and you have a dog, dog care, 4-H, and junior showmanship, both, it's not just about going out and winning ribbons. These kids learn things that are life skills. And I mentioned at the top of the show that 4-H kind of saved me. But it did. And it is an amazing program. And junior showmanship has a lot of the same sort of concepts. And the idea is that the child learns responsibility. The child learns timeliness, punctuality. The child learns how to accept wins and losses. The child learns a great deal about life, how to get up early in the morning, mm-hmm. how to, you know, give things up to get something they want, right? Whatever it is. And every parent's going to have their way of handling it. And God knows there's some stage moms and juniors, just like there are in anything else. Uh-huh. But that, I mean, that's fine to each their own. Each, you know, everybody gets to do it their own way, but that doesn't take away from the value to the child and to the family when that is used appropriately, I guess I would say. And then bonus, you don't have to go in the dog show ring. You can wear your jeans and your shit kickers and the kid can show the dogs.
Yes.
That's a, like a really cool thing.
That is. Exactly. If that's not incentive right there to give it a try, mm-hmm. if you have mm-hmm. a kid older mm-hmm. than 9 or older,
yep.
I don't know what is, because
yep.
that what a good, I mean, responsibility, they're learning yep. responsibility and they're out there doing it. They're learning.
Doing it.
They're yep. yeah.
And it's,
I do think that they can probably win and lose a, you know, maybe sometimes a little easier than adults can.
Yes.
It's
sometimes, but it's, yeah. it really is. I've had a lot of kids work for me. I've raised up a whole lot of juniors. I don't have children of my own. So they become sort of the children of my heart. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I have watched children blossom and grow and develop, and they may or may not stay with it. That's not the point. The point is the opportunity to have that, those skills that they can apply in any aspect of their life.
Right. What are some other venues people can try to learn about general mm-hmm. structure? I know I've been to a couple seminars that Pat Hastings has done.
Yep. Pat Hastings seminars are great.
Yeah. Amazing. She has a yep. video as well, Puppy Puzzle, that mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I actually watch every litter that we have. Mm-hmm. I watch it before I do puppy evals just to mm-hmm. be reminded or catch another tip mm-hmm. before I do our evaluations.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of ways to do that, to learn about structure, to learn about how to do things. I do seminars. Lots of the handlers that are out of work at the moment are doing seminars. So that's another, just kind of a, to put it in the moment, that's different than the last, literally 2 weeks ago that we talked, Courtney.
Mm-hmm.
The reality check is there is a lot of very broke, unemployed professional dog handlers right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're happy to help you. You know, they can do it on video. You send them a good video of your dog, or you can talk to them on the telephone, or, you know, there's a lot of ways to utilize the resources that are available that are probably more available right now than they were just 2 weeks ago.
Where can we find those, Laura? Where can we find the handlers yep. doing that?
Yep. The best thing that I can recommend in terms of reaching out to a professional handler in the dog show world, there's two different resources. The first that I always recommend is the Professional Handlers Association, because I was a member of that organization. And the second is the American Kennel Club's Registered Handler Program.
Okay.
Anytime that I send someone to a professional handler, I'm going to strongly encourage them to go to one of those two organizations, because those really are the cream of the crop. These are people with knowledge that they are willing, just by definition, willing to share.
Mm-hmm. And when we get back going, dog shows are happening again. Talk to us about the difference or advantages from a novice, someone new to this, trying it mm-hmm. Versus sending their dog out with a professional, if that's going to be an option for them.
I will tell you, there's two sides to the coin, right? There's the DIY, the build the bond, the pride in doing it yourself, which I do not dismiss. It is really powerful. I spent a lot of years living in a different area and didn't have as many clients. And I did a lot of teaching people in handling classes who went on and were very successful with their own dogs. And that is, I'm as proud of them as I would have been if I had done it myself. Right. I love that. I will add or amend that is going to take longer and cost more, 9 times out of 10, just because the learning curve is sharp. If you go to a plumber that is going to fix your septic system that's coming up in your tub, you can pick your cousin Joe or you can pick the trained professional. Mm-hmm. Just putting it out there.
So talk to me about the ideal time to send a dog. If I'm
right,
I'm going to be hunting my dog every mm-hmm. fall. I can mm-hmm. tell you that it's not yep. going to be walking around yep. a show ring.
No, nope. And that's fine.
And so when, at what age is my dog going to look the best? And when I'm ready to send it out, what do you want from me and my,
okay. You'll have as my a dog handler, doing? Right. As a handler, I finished a lot of dual champions. It was part of what I did. I showed dual champion short hairs and wire hair pointers and champion master hunter lab and all kinds of things, right? Mm-hmm. So my favorite thing, I always would tell people, if you've got a dog that you think is going to make a champion, get it through its early bird work, right? Get it to me late spring, early summer. It's too hot to be doing a lot of training. You've got its all its initial work put into it, so it's somewhere in that 6 to 9 months to a year category, depending on the breed. And let me get it finished. Let me have it for 3 months. Probably won't take me more than that. Let me have it for 3 months. Let me finish it and send it home to you. Because particularly dogs, field trial dogs, for example, that are being roaded and dragging chains and doing the kind of stuff that they need to do in order to be in the condition they need to be in to run our stakes and that kind of stuff. There are physiological changes that happen to a dog that is that hyper muscled that make it more difficult to be successful in the show ring. And one of the dogs that I finished was a wire hair pointer that was a national field champion. And I got it from the owner and I literally had to put it in a dog crate and let it sit there for a month before it quit looking like Arnold Schwarzenegger enough for me to get him finished.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Truth. And, I mean, that's the reality.
And grow a coat.
And get the condition mm-hmm. and get the stains and get the nails. And, you know, it's just a different level, right? It's just a mm-hmm. different level of presentation. When you're running a dog in the field, you're trying to paint the best picture that you can for those judges that are watching your dog. Absolutely no different from what I did. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just that I'm doing it in a smaller circle.
And what age do you like?
I personally love 6-month-old puppies, even though I'm not kidding. I love six okay. because they're cute, because mm-hmm. they're cute, because I can get them trained. They don't have any bad habits and they get cute factor. And just sort of the way the world is today in dog shows, if you come into the ring with a fully mature adult dog in the open class, they look at you like, what's wrong with it? Right. Mm. Particularly in wire hair pointers, because
point. Yeah.
the dogs are all finished by the time they're a year old. So mm-hmm. let me have a cute 6-month-old puppy that hasn't had its, you know, shoulders blown out pulling tires and being roaded for an hour a day. Mm-hmm. And let me just finish it. And I mm-hmm. talked to a lot of guys about this. They're like, no, not going to put the money into it until it's field champion. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that's legit. That's cool. You know, that's right. your choice. I will tell you, it's just going to take more time then. Right.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier that the show champion you feel is the easiest to put on mm-hmm, of, mm-hmm. of all the titles.
Outside of a pointing breeds junior hunter, okay. which I personally believe that if a wire hair pointer, for example, cannot get a junior hunter, they should not be fed. So, a little extreme perhaps, but that's my opinion.
Yep.
It is a very simple test. Yeah. And a show champion is a bit more challenging than that, but only mm-hmm. a bit.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay. And how, did you say 3 months I could expect about?
I would think 3 months.
Every weekend with a handler.
Right. Exactly. Okay. And keep in mind, this is a dog that you've shown to this handler. The handler said, yeah, I can do this. Try and find one that's honest. I mean, that's one of the reasons I recommend the PHA and the AKC Registered Handler Program. You're going to get a better chance of having somebody that's going to be honest with you. And if they say this dog isn't going to do it, listen to them. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And be honest with them. Be honest with the handler. Tell them, listen, all I want is for this dog to finish his championship, right? I don't need a grand champion. I don't need a best in show winner. I don't need this to take a lifetime. I don't want to, you know, be your gas money dog. I just need this dog's championship finished. Mm-hmm. And if you come to them with that, they'll be respectful of that. 98% of the people that you will work with will be respectful of that.
Right.
And if you have any questions, call me and I'll help you.
Oh, so seriously, okay. What's the easiest way for our listeners to contact you, Laura? Do you want to give the phone number? Or do you
not really? No. But okay, give us your email. Me. Absolutely. Okay. Email me at laura@puredogtalk.com. Always happy to help. And offer suggestions and referrals and people that I know personally, just mm-hmm. like you guys know in your world, there's people you'd put a dog with and there's people you wouldn't. I mm-hmm. have that same insight that I am happy to offer.
Okay. And something to add to that too, coated breeds or wire mm-hmm. hairs, handlers that are comfortable.
Yeah. They have to know how to do the grooming. Right. Yep. If yeah, you take your dog that needs, yep. If you take your dog that needs to be hand stripped to the poodle handler, it's not going to go so well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So right. there, that's another, you know, people have specialties. People maybe have more sporting dogs than they'll ever be able to keep up with, or people, you know, only show Shih Tzu and they're not good there. They don't want to do with a wire hair more. Right. So, I mean, there's, pardon me. There are legitimate, people that make good choices for handlers for people that are trying to find and put together a dual dog.
Okay. Cool. Anything else you want to add about the structure aspect of this?
The biggest thing that I'm going to say on structure is think about what your dog does when you're out hunting. Just stop, just sit there for a minute and think about it. That dog is an athlete and it can run on heart and it can run on desire, but you're asking it to do pretty amazing work. And if you love your dog as much as I love mine, I want them to be able to do that work as easily as they can. And in a breeding program, my dogs have earned well over 100 titles, and that is show champion and field title and whatever. And there are times when I make breeding decisions that I give a little on pretty, and there's other times that I give a little on, you know, work ethic, right? That's part of the process for me. And I understand not everybody's willing to give on one thing to get something else, but just think about it. Look at your dogs. You don't have to make them into show champions. You just need to look at them and think, is that dog constructed in such a way that it's making its life easier?
So true. All right. I want to do a little rapid fire with you. Can we do that?
All right, let's hit it.
You haven't practiced, so.
No, I have no idea. Nobody gave me the debate notes.
You didn't get my outline on the, on these, no, but
absolutely
I want it off the cuff. I want it from the heart.
All right.
Okay. You ready?
I'm ready.
Your all-time favorite dog.
Of any breed of a wire.
Any breed, whether you owned it or not, something that wowed you, inspired you.
I'm going to say my favorite dog of all time was my smoke dog. I'm sorry. I can't help it. She was everything. She was a great show dog. She was a great bird dog. She was a great producer. She was my friend. Smoke. Sorry.
Good. I like that one. I know that dog. Loved her.
Dog.
Yep. Okay. No tears allowed. Here we go. No tears. Next one. Tell us something about yourself that we don't know. And you're an open book, so this is going to be hard.
This is going to be a challenge. What is it that people don't know about me? One of my jobs in college was that I drove horse-drawn carriages in Temple Square in Salt Lake City. That's a true story.
I'm not going to ask more questions into the question.
It was a favorite. It was the best job I've ever had. And I will tell you right now, if someday I disappear from the world, y'all should just go looking for me. And somewhere that there's horse-drawn carriages, you will find me.
Are you going to be wearing a top hat?
I did. I had a top hat. I had a whole outfit. It was awesome.
So the picture I'm going to put with this podcast, I'm going to need that one of you.
I don't know that I have that picture. You can find a picture of me on a horse, though. You can do that.
Oh, I got that. I know. Okay. All right. Next one. What are you most grateful for with having that dogs have brought into your life?
My people. Hmm. My friends are my family. My parents are both gone. I'm not close with a lot of my blood family, and my dog family is my tribe.
Mm-hmm. The dog community is amazing.
It is. And there are people in my dog community who are surface friends, and there are people on my dog community who I literally know for a fact mm-hmm. would like risk their life for me. And I for them.
Interesting question.
Oops, wait. Sorry, Siri, shut up.
That's interesting.
But that is what dogs have brought me. I have people that I have been friends with, that I have been to hell and back with, because of dogs. People that used to not be friends that are friends. People that used to be friends that aren't friends, but it's like a big dysfunctional family, and it's mine, and they're the people I pick, and I love that.
Awesome. What's your favorite podcast?
I'm not going to lie to you. It's the only one I listen to is mine. Wait.
You haven't subscribed to any other podcast?
The only other podcast that I do subscribe to and have listened to occasionally is Dan Savage, Savage Love.
Okay.
Because the fact is, I knew Dan Savage. I worked with Dan Savage at the Stranger newspaper in Seattle, Washington, back in my grunge rock days.
Okay. All right.
There you go.
Okay.
You asked, man.
I know. I'm ready for any of it. Just unpacking it here.
Savage Love. I'm not sure anybody's ready for that.
I don't even know who that is, so we're just going
to
move on.
You're going to have to look it up.
Okay. All right. If you had another breed, so I know you've had several, so it's kind of like you're most into wire hairs, okay?
Yes.
And so what would it be if you had another breed? And you can't name one that you've already, you can't say Spinoni, you can't say Plumber.
I can't say any of the ones I already have?
No.
Oh, man, that's rough.
No.
Okay.
Like if you had to start all over and
if
get
I had to start
real
all over
in.
Again?
Yes.
Oh, now you're killing me.
Yep, all over.
All over again. This is going to make your listeners kind of laugh out loud, but you guys have got to discover a breed called the Laotian.
Okay.
It's my old lady breed. It's like this little fluffy moppet of a dog. They're old. They're from Germany. They were originally bred to sit on the fancy aristocratic ladies' laps and catch the fleas. And they have the most beautiful hair. And you get the best part is you get to shave half of it off. And Laotian means little lion dog. And so the back half of the dog is shaved and has a little tail and little ankle things. And they are the sweetest little creatures ever known to man. I adore them. Cute. I will have one for my old age breed.
I've had my hands on several of them just working and they're sweet. They're cute and they're sweet.
And I love their fur. Like you just want to like curl up with them on your pillow.
Yeah. Yeah. So cute. Good. All right. What's your favorite wine?
Red.
And that's only a soup. That's not a
Red.
That's only assuming you, I don't know you and you might drink wine. That's
right.
All.
Yeah, that's all.
I can't say the color.
Okay. So the very best, my very favorite, Paso Robles, Old Vine Zinfandel.
Okay.
There you go.
Say the brand again.
Any winery from the Paso Robles area in Southern California, Southern California.
Is that a dry?
It is a dry red wine. Yep. Okay. It's a full bodied, the Zinfandels are full bodied. So, if you look at it from Pinot Noir, that's very thin and light up through a Merlot to a Cabernet, to me, the richest, the most full body, the ton of mouth feel, a lot of character, little more fruit than say a lot of the Cabs or Merlots, but just really round and rich is the Old Vine Zin.
Okay.
Is that good. More than you wanted on that?
No, that was good. Okay, last question. We're not doing very good with rapid.
We're doing awesome. Like, we're killing it. This is going to be everybody's favorite part of this whole podcast.
Like, what's the opposite for rapid?
meandering. Oops, there was a squirrel.
We're not in the rapid zone. We're in the meandering zone. Okay, last question. What, Laura Reeves, is your best advice for someone new to bird dogs to inspire them to try something new, whether it's they are a show person or whether they are in bird dogs in the field? What's your advice?
Honestly, again, that dog is your best friend. The more things you get to do with your best friend, the happier you all are. Most of these bird dogs are like wire hairs. The tireder they are, the better a dog they are, right? So the more things that you can do with them, the more jobs you can give them to do, the more interaction you guys have as a team, the better off everybody's life is. Your drywall will thank you. They won't chew holes in it quite so much. Speaking as someone who's had them eat the drywall.
Well, you've been amazing, and I really appreciate your time today and all your knowledge. And I do think and hope that you've inspired.
I am happy to help, and I am honored to be asked. And I wish you all the luck in your endeavor. I go out of my way. I think all women should support one another. I think that we get way too busy being catty, and we need to do a whole lot more of building each other up and not tearing each other down.
Amen. Absolutely. Yeah. And although I know you're not going to listen to my podcast.
I will. I swear to God, I will. I'm sure I will. You got to tell me where's the link to it, man. You got to give me a link.
Oh my goodness. Oh, that is so good. All right. Okay, Laura, you have an amazing night, and you go grab yourself a bottle of red and
Some
next time we see each other, I know what to get you.
I think I have a glass of Paso Robles Zinfandel waiting for me on the counter in the kitchen. So I'm saying,
amazing! You're awesome. Thanks, Laura. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Courtney.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. I'm so grateful you chose to hit play today. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with your friends. Subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to show your love and support of this content, become one of my Patreon patrons. As a patron, you receive more discounts, content, are an insider to the Bird Dog Babe community. In addition, 2% goes towards conservation. If you want to learn more about this episode and others, head over to thebirddogbabe.com for show notes and discount codes from our sponsors. And follow me on Instagram at thebirddogbabe. If there's a topic you'd like me to get after, go to my website and fill out the contact form, because this show is for you. Until next time, Bird Dog Babes, keep them versatile.